You guys, it's Andy Scrawls. Listen, I'm recording this, I don't even know what day, Thursday night, and I'm recording it Thursday night because I just watched part two of Potomac, and I don't know, oh, it's episode whatever, and I don't know, I know that one of the reasons I was able to delay watching part two of the Potomac reunion was because I was aware and also pretty confident that I wouldn't be seeing a lot of spoilers on social because so few people have been talking about Potomac this season, which is not in any way a criticism of that. But just to say I felt safe to be on Instagram and not see things that I didn't want to. Noting, by the way, that when you delay watching something that's like live on TV and decide to go on social media, that's entirely on your ass if you see a spoiler. So I was more than willing to take that risk. And I also have to say, to be perfectly honest, that I was hopeful it would be a good episode, but I didn't think it would be. And so there was a part of me that was like procrastinating through a state of denial that this would end up being something. And I just watched it and I said a couple things out loud while watching. But the last thing that I said was, what the fuck did I just watch? And this isn't to say that my opinion is the right one. If you've been listening to Andy Scrawls for long enough, you know that that is almost never what I say, unless I am saying I am in love with Chris Manzo. He is my one and only, in which that is in fact the law. But from the good book of my Hinge profile. But it's not to say that people can't find something valuable and worthwhile from watching this specific reunion arc. I mean, that is certainly the goal. I feel bad that I did not have that experience, and I'm a little frustrated, to be honest, because it feels like we're tiptoeing around stuff, but I don't even think the conversation was edited in a way that provided like nuance or an extended conversation. It felt like, you know, people would sort of start to open up, someone would interject, then argument or fight would be about the interjection, and then Andy or the cast wouldn't pivot back to the initial comment. Like, I guess I'll start with, I think maybe one of the most difficult aspects of the reunion to me as a viewer, noting I am obviously a white woman, was the colorism conversation, because I felt like I wanted to hear more from Candace and hear more from Robin, and it didn't happen. And then at a certain point, Andy's like, well, I want to wrap this up. And I'm thinking, wait a second, but we didn't resolve anything. And if Robin feels like she's carrying a burden from the last reunion, from how that conversation went at the reunion, and feeling upset about it, feeling upset about what Candace said about her on social, like, let's dig into that. When are we ever going to do this again? I don't think we are. I mean, Candace has put herself on pause since. So it's like, we know when these conversations, it's like, oh, what's going to happen with like Candace and Ashley? What's going to happen with Candace and Robin? Nothing. Nothing is going to happen because she is not going to be on the show at least next season. And who knows what's going to happen after that. So I'm not blaming Candace for the timing of the reunion. I'm just saying that like the sense of stakes here with a lot is completely null and void. But even understanding that, even accepting it, I was hoping for a little bit more. Like there was stuff that we didn't really take a hold of in a way that I was like, just as a viewer, I just wanted a little bit more space. Like I wanted a little bit more space. Candace started talking about the conversation she had at her, essentially her like kitchen table growing up, that when they would have dinner, her family was talking about race, was talking about colorism, which means that when she's having those conversations, she doesn't necessarily feel nervous about having them and probably nervous about, like, in her way, cutting to the chase. And that was seen as maybe an attack by other cast members or passive aggressive or something, because I think at that point, Giselle cut in and possibly Robin. But we didn't get back to what Candace was going to say. She was just setting that up as like the background of how she grew up, but we didn't even get to like the fucking thesis statement because it went in a different direction. And I think it was important to have the moment that they did have where Robin is talking about the fact that when Candace minimized Robin's experience as a Black woman by saying, you know, she was white adjacent, the harm and the upset that that caused, especially in a conversation about colorism. And to have Robin break down in that moment and say, like, that stayed with me, that and also a feeling of regret and upset that I was, that she felt that she was being called a colorist. To have that conversation and then go to Dr. Wendy saying, you know, it's similar to when you're having a conversation about racism and the people don't want to necessarily be identified in a certain way, but are they as concerned about the behavior they're exhibiting that might lead to an end result? And we didn't get past that point. I was like, wait a second. So let's talk about behavior. If that is when, if this is the place where we're going to have this conversation, we're not. We're having a moment between Candace and Robin. Candace did apologize to Robin for that comment, which I thought was important and necessary and good to see. But we didn't get past the point of what Wendy was saying, Dr. Wendy was saying of like, there are examples here. Why aren't we talking about those examples? We're just kind of like, I don't even know what the fuck is happening. Like, we're just, it felt a little bit just as a viewer, like we were sort of, and this isn't specific to the colorism conversation, but with other stuff, it's like we're edging around things, but we're not taking it to the next level. It felt like Andy and production, really. Sometimes when I say Andy, I mean Andy. And sometimes when I say Andy, I mean Andy as a as like the symbol of production guiding the conversation, obviously with questions that production wrote. That it was like just checking off the list of like, okay, and this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. But usually at a reunion, I mean, at a good one, that's like the jumping off point to have another conversation, which might zig and might zag, but will hopefully go somewhere. And with this, I just feel like everybody's cutting each other off. Nobody is willing to listen to each other. There's just so much space between Candace and Giselle that's impacting everybody else. They're just unwilling to engage in a way that's so deeply unhelpful for the show, which is why Candace isn't coming back, because I think she acknowledged and probably realized that Giselle's probably staying, or she doesn't want to come back next season for her own reasons, which she has every right to. But you know, it was tough. There was one moment where I was like, okay, we're gonna get somewhere. The conversation of Giselle talking about sending Grace to school in Florida and the concern that she felt as a parent sending her child, who's a young Black woman, to school in Florida and feeling concern about safety and everything else. And so, you know, there's the pivot to I was annoyed or upset that Dr. Wendy and Candace were disrespectful during that scene and giving looks. Now, they did the little flashback of their faces during the dinner scene. And I didn't think, I don't know, I guess it's just me, I didn't think it was a distraction as a viewer that they weren't participating. I didn't think that they were giving like real looks, but I do understand a feeling of like, isn't there space in the middle here when we're talking about our families in the ways that Karen at one point said kids are off the table. When children come up, is there a way to not be rude? Like, because I think you can, you know, successfully argue that the looks that they were sharing with each other, I didn't think it was a big deal, but could you say that that was rude? 100% you could. So when Giselle is saying, like, I just, you know, found myself really upset at that, I'm thinking, like, was that really a big thing that they were doing at that point? To me, as a total outsider, it was not, but I also understood why she would feel that there is just a sacred space when it comes to talking about your family, specifically your children, because Lord knows husbands are on the table. But when it comes to your kids, don't be a dick, essentially. And so Candace starts saying, I regret greatly. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, we're getting somewhere. See, we're going to have a moment. This is, we're going to get that kind of togetherness, or that kind of like, we're talking about the kids and we're going to get somewhere. And she continues that sentence. And then I think I said out loud something along the lines of like, oh God, no. When she goes, I regret greatly, dot, 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 that Giselle would try to weaponize her children. And then I was like, we're not getting anywhere. I don't have an opinion on that. I don't think that Giselle, well, I guess here's the opinion that I don't have. I don't think that Giselle was weaponizing her children in that moment. I don't think she was like using them, manipulating her upset about the looks against Candace, specifically using her kids. I personally don't. And I've said a lot of shit about Giselle, including, I guess, over the course of this episode. But I don't think she was doing that. And I also was just like, oh, okay, so we're just going to get nowhere here. I guess I still have a sense of hope when I'm watching an episode that it won't be a waste of time. And maybe that's the hope that I carry for Potomac. It's not even hope that like relationships will be repaired. It's hope for myself that I will watch something that feels like we're getting somewhere as viewers, as the Bravo community, that we're going to get to something that feels meaningful, where I can say to myself, oh, as a content creator, here's something to discuss. But also, to me, more importantly, as a Bravo viewer, this wasn't a waste of my time because we got somewhere with the reunion. And, you know, if you haven't watched a season of something, and I'm pretty much a completionist, except for that last season of Orange County during COVID, which, yes, I do plan to rewatch. That if you don't want to be a completionist, and God bless, typically the reunions are an opportunity to just kind of catch up on the season. And so if you want to do that, more power to you. I mean, honestly, I'm jealous. With this reunion cycle right now, I'm like, I don't know that I would recommend it, at least not part two. I don't remember how I felt about part one, but how do I feel about part two? Not well, bitch. Like, not great. It just did not land for me. And I delayed watching it for several days in the hopes that something would happen that would just enable some crossing of the line, knowing that Candace isn't going to be back. Just the feeling of like, are we going to get just a little bit of closure here? And not necessarily with Candace, not necessarily with Giselle, but like Mia, who does make me laugh, who had moments throughout the rest of the episode that like I did find charming. But when she's saying that ink had nothing to do with the separation and it was all just a matter of timing, which isn't that what we mean when we say, did he have anything to do with the separation? It's just a matter of timing. Well, that's exactly what the question is. Did he have something to do with the separation? Because that's literally timing, the timing of when you started seeing ink again. And then she's talking about the fact that like, she's got this penthouse apartment. I don't know why she has to keep saying penthouse. They said that about their current apartment. And then something came out on social that was like, no, she lives on the top floor. I live in a building right now. There are several floors. It is a walk up. You're welcome. I mean, living in the absolute best. But the top floor isn't a penthouse. It's just the top floor of a like fifth floor walk up. Sometimes when she says penthouse, like for the current apartment where people took to social and said, you know, I know someone who's in that building, it's not a penthouse. It's just like closer to the top floor, where I'm like, why are we saying this is something that it might not be? And I know that's the dumbest question of all time when it comes to housewives, but I'm like, let go of it a little. Just say, you know, I'm in an apartment. It's 1,100 square feet. I don't even know what that means. Like, it is what it is. I went to school for theater. You know, I could play a number, but I don't know that I could envision what 1,100 square feet is. I'm sure it is much more than the size of my apartment, which is, you know, a spiritual penthouse is what I'm trying to say. But when she was talking about the ink stuff and the separation, I'm thinking like, wait a second, how does that balance with all the shit that we heard during the finale, which was, frankly, if you're going to watch anything from Potomac, watch the last couple minutes, last 20 minutes of the Potomac finale, and then call it a day. Don't watch anything else if you really don't want to. You will be very well fed for the post separation announcement, quasi come to Jesus conversation between Mia and Gordon. But she's saying that like ink, the timing, and it's not really, it didn't affect anything. And I'm just thinking about what Gordon said out loud to Mia, aka us, about the fact that the kids were living with Mia in one of Ink's or in Ink's house in Atlanta, I believe, which also another one of the cast members, I think it was Robin, was referencing when Mia's saying, I live in DC. And I think it was Robin was like, wait a second, weren't you living in Atlanta? When she said Atlanta, I thought, right, Ink's house, because Gordon was also saying that his kids were, at least his daughter was coming up to him being like, Daddy, are you being replaced by this man? And like, mommy's in bed with a guy who isn't you. Like, the lack of communication seemingly between Mia and Gordon, let alone Mia and Gordon and the kids, is concerning to me. But I don't know that that does that still work within the framework of what Mia was saying? Because I don't know when their actual separation, I don't remember, God forbid, the date of when their separation took place, but it would appear to me that if Gordon wasn't aware, maybe, that Mia and Ink were a thing, then doesn't that mean that the timing does matter? And also the to be continued at the end of the episode of Gordon saying, you know, the husbands are on stage and Gordon saying something along the lines of like, you know, some of you might know this, but it's not going to be a surprise. Or some of you may be aware of this, but it will be a surprise. There's something that it needs to be said. And it's a to be continued moment. I have no idea what he's going to say. I feel like it might end up being a nothing burger, except if it's coming from Gordon about Gordon and Mia, it might actually be a moment. I wonder if what he's going to say is something close to, you know, I love Mia. She's the love of my life, but I know that I am not hers. That the person she is meant to be with is this other man. I would not be super surprised if that was said. Or maybe I would be surprised if that was said, but I also kind of think it might be what was said. I can't think of anything else. The Jeremiah question of like paternity, that got squashed pretty quickly. That was not the dun, 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 do we really know what's going on? It just sounds like, yes, Jeremiah is Gordon's biological son and Ink thinks that Jeremiah is his for reasons we don't entirely understand, which was a little bit of an awkward moment that Karen, God bless her, cut off. Karen, just watching Karen throughout the episode, it made me kind of like feel sad for Karen, but also so appreciative for her because it feels like she's the only adult on stage, or at least the only person I'm genuinely invested in who's providing like clarity and maturity and humor and grace. And there was a moment where Mia's talking about, you know, when she went on a trip with Gordon, when she was the girlfriend, she realized the nature of vacations with, like, I guess Gordon and his friends, that there are trips that Gordon and his friends take where they're going on vacation with the girlfriends, where the wives don't know that the girlfriends are, you know, obviously going on the trip. And it was the same destination that Ray had discussed going to on vacation. And Karen kept looking at him like side eye, but in a joking way of, you know, you told me you go on this trip alone, but is there a girlfriend? That did make me laugh. I also sort of forgot about Ray. So when he was on stage, there was a part of me that's like, oh, Ray, I'm so sorry you have to deal with this today. I'm so sorry. I feel like there are better things for you to do in your twilight years. And, you know, he's going to live forever. He's going to outlive all of us, and as well he must, as well he should, as well he must. But I'm just thinking, like, this is not fun. This isn't like a great retirement community. This is just people blockading each other from, God forbid, having any sense of nuance or anything else. And I didn't love it for him. I was very impressed when Happy Eddie said that his cannabis company has made $2 million over the first 6 months that it was in business. I don't know anything about companies, but I'm like, holy fucking shit, that's a lot. I mean, good for him, good for them. Paris is always a good idea. And when I schlep on over to Europe, to my favorite city in the world, I bring with me a few important phrases that I have learned from housewives. C'est bon, chic c'est la vie. Je m'appelle the Countess, n'est-ce pas, Luann? And while those key phrases are important when speaking to any French bravo-holic, for other matters of life, that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including, of course, French. It features fast language acquisition. It immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you really learn to speak, to listen, and to think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. J'adore Chris Manzo. Et toi? There's a speech recognition filter which gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient with desktop and app options, and it's an amazing value. Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, AGs can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. I just came back from the salon, and for the record, I went with a sassy little bob and quiet luxury shade of blonde. Yes, that's literally what we're calling it, quiet luxury. Aside from trips to the salon, I don't actually blow out my hair. My hair is naturally wavy, and that's why I love Way. Way's new anti-frizz cream is a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. I know that I have a limited amount of time with wet, wavy hair in which to get myself in order. And that is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It has notes of bergamot, Italian lemon, violet, and more. And it smells unbelievable. Truly, as someone who is a little bit sensitive to scents, I put this in my hair and I feel great. It also genuinely pairs well with my perfume, which I appreciate. I don't blow out my hair because after years of color processing and attempting to make it straight, I know it looks better and stays healthier when I avoid blow drying, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. I've used products, especially with wavy hair, where it feels heavy and looks kind of wet. And that's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream, because it enhances the natural waves in my hair. I still look like me, just a little elevated. And P.S., I am way obsessed with Way's other bestsellers. Their leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, my personal favorite. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com with promo code Andy. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. I assume we're not going to hear a lot from Eddie in part three, and God bless him. That's honestly sort of a reward for him to not have to participate in this a lot. You know, Andy did open up the guys being on stage by saying, like, does anybody want to talk about the fact that Juan isn't here and all of you are? And no one would really participate in it. No one really wanted to drag Juan. I assume that's like a bro code style reaction. Although Gordon saying essentially like, listen, this isn't, I'm not trying to insult or attack Juan in any way, but I'm just saying I'm here to support my wife. And if she's my wife or my ex-wife, I'm here to support her. I thought that was a really important point. I don't know. I don't know how much more we're going to get into the questions about that person saying that she was sort of sexting, I guess, through DM with Chris, Robin being really invested in having that conversation. I guess we'll maybe get to more of that on part three. I don't really know what we're doing with it, though. Is Robin saying she believes this person who recanted and then recanted their recanting? If they said that they have a dick pic of Juan, LOL. No, that's Miss Canada. She has more than a dick pic, by the way. If it's this person, this like sort of nameless person saying that Chris sent her a dick pic, why is Robin pushing it unless she had received that? Like, is Robin just going to continue to push? Well, they said you sent, this person said you sent her something. Did you send it? Or I don't believe in you when you said you didn't. I mean, is there any kind of backup here that we're getting to? Or are we just talking about some random person who more likely than not was just looking to get attention and kind of backed down pretty quickly about it? Do I think it's going to lead to something? I don't. I also think, Robin, it would be so much easier for her to be this salty if her husband wasn't just continuing to embarrass her by not supporting her in any possible way. I mean, it's tough when Robin's trying to say that Chris was maybe engaging in some sort of sexting relationship when her husband like fucked a woman whose hotel room he paid for. And she's saying it's sort of, we're not in a don't ask, don't tell scenario. I believe him. And when he tells me he just needs to spring clean his DMs and there's nothing there, but I totally believe that nothing happened. If Chris is saying nothing happened, it would be easier for this to go about if it was anybody else asking questions, but it's just so obviously hypocritical and contradictory because Robin has done this whole spiel of I believe a man when he says he didn't fuck some broad or whatever. So what are we doing, babe? Because the more she tries to bring it up, I just see that empty seat behind her. And I think that, you know, because there's not a whole lot going on. I think that for me, as someone who initially felt like Robin should understand that Juan does not want to continue in this marriage and is just going to continue to tell her that with what he's doing, I don't know that it's like they have an open relationship. They don't want to bring it up on TV. I don't think that's what's going on. I honestly kind of feel like the way that Robin is behaving on TV is probably very close to how she would be behaving if she wasn't on the show. And word on the street is that might be, you know, it might be a little bit of a wrap for her. This would be a pause that she did not decide to take.
And when we say pause, I mean, some of these are pauses, but some of them are absolutely not, the vast majority, in fact. It's a little tough because I've just come to a place in my life, in thinking of Robin, where I just have to make peace for the fact that, like, she is willing to be embarrassed by this man. I'm not going to say she wants that. But if you're consistently choosing to be with someone who doesn't do basic steps to protect you from being mocked on national television and refuses to show up because, God forbid, he feels a sense of discomfort, it's like relationships, marriages are not 50-50. Sometimes they're 50-50. Sometimes they're 80-20. Sometimes they're, 10-90. It's not going to be even throughout, but this is obviously one of those moments where Juan's absence certainly makes Robin's job harder. And it is sort of depressing that he's not willing to do the work to support his wife. Like, Gordon couldn't be in more kind of like hot water when it comes to being asked tough questions. Noting what we watched in the finale, noting the news about their separation sort of being like a post-filming shock, but he showed up. He's getting a divorce from this woman. Now, he wants to stay married to her, but he's getting a divorce from this woman. He's still showing up to support her. And the fact that Juan isn't, it's like, okay, I got it. Like, why should I care more than your husband does? And more than you do about your husband. If you are doing this whole thing that you sort of don't care that he's here, or you don't feel comfortable saying that you do care that he's not here, that's okay. Got it. Copy that. I'm going to care less. And if you want to participate in this relationship, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people, but that's Robin's choice to make. You know, she gets to choose whether or not to believe her husband, who's absolutely fucking Miss Canada. Like, it's not even a question. And the more we hear about how trustworthy he is when he doesn't know where DMs are and he's like erased all of them and she can't access his phone or whatever else. Okay, seems like a great guy, husband of the year, but he's her husband. She gets to choose the kind of relationship that she wants. I don't believe she wants this specific relationship, but I think it's the best she can get with Juan. And she wants to stay married. And sometimes the cost of getting divorced, and I don't just mean financial, but certainly that's now a factor because he does not have a job. The cost of that is sometimes really significant when it comes to what your day to day is going to be like. And so that's where it is. It's like, how much longer can we talk about all of the indicators that Juan gives to people that he's like a little bit of a fuck up as a husband? That's sort of maybe among the best things you could say about Juan these days. And so there we are. I mean, it's just one of those things. I'm looking at that empty chair and empty tables. And I'm just, kind of sad for her, but also, okay, if you're telling us you're fine with it, we will take you at your word. It was a downer. I'm so sorry. I don't have a lot to say about it. There was another moment. I'm kind of skipping back and forth, but I'm just pulling what it was that I just fucking watched from my mind. But there was a moment when Mia was talking about her upset about Wendy and Candace not reaching out after the separation was announced. That she essentially heard from everyone, including people that she had been in, fights with, in long-term arguments with, and hadn't heard from Candace and Dr. Wendy. And the responses that they tried to have initially, I thought were like not great, which is essentially, well, just so you know, Gordon was saying a lot of terrible things about you to the guys trying to humiliate you. And so we kept confidences on that, which is neither here nor there. You can say that. It's not an example of you being a good friend. It's not an example of you being a supporter, because ideally she wouldn't know about that. But she does know that you did not simply text her and say, I heard the news. I'm so sorry. That requires so little on their parts that I thought it was sort of honestly gross that neither of them reached out. And I appreciated the fact that I remember Candace acknowledging it. I think Dr. Wendy did too. Like that they acknowledged like, yes, we could have reached out and we should have. And I'm like, great, put it to bed. They said that they didn't do this thing. They were coming up with a reason for it. Reason was like sort of neither here nor there. Great that you're not going to say all the crazy shit he said about you, but like, great. But also, in addition to that, you know, actually show up. There's a difference between staying quiet and then using your voice. So use your voice to just send her like a 6-word, I'm so sorry, sending you love. I mean, wow, miracles can happen. So I appreciated that moment. I also, speaking of moments, was genuinely surprised in conversation about another fucking relationship or at least an alleged divorce that... I don't even know where we are with that. Is that never going to happen? It doesn't feel like Ashley is really vibing for it to take place. I'm not really seeing upset about Michael. I don't know how much of that is because she's under like legal threat, not to say anything terrible about him, but this man is just the goddamn worst. But in conversation about that dumbass lawsuit that he filed against Candace, the fact that Candace said, you know, I think it was like my mom thought that you were somehow behind this or trying to cash in through the lawsuit, but I know that you had nothing to do with it, like that you were not aware of the details of it. I thought to myself, well, that feels like a miracle. Like, great. That's awesome. I did not expect Candace to say that, to say like, you know, Ashley, when you're saying you didn't know anything about it, I believe that you didn't. I thought, okay, round of applause. So I guess there's something positive that happened. It was sort of a flyaway moment, which tells you about the direction of the episode itself. But I appreciated that. But then I'm also thinking, oh, great. So next season we'll get to see them get along. Oh, no, we won't because Candace is on pause. So like none of this means anything. It's, Candace is at the center of so much that it's like I note the frustration that I feel. But there is also that added frustration of like if we're not able to get shit out, then we just have people who've held a lot of stuff inside who won't have Candace next season and are just now at the point of just continuing to hold it. Are we just supposed to have a new beginning reset and pretend that none of this happened? I don't think that's how people work. It's like everyone carries baggage with them. You're going to carry the baggage if you're a cast member of this season who's lucky enough to get a sign up to next season. You're still going to carry the baggage of how you felt about people from last season. And if you decide to talk about them while filming the next season that they're not on, I cannot imagine a worse idea than that, because this season was such a flop for so many people that to think of speaking about Candace in absentia at this point is not a great idea, but neither is pretending that none of this occurred. I don't know what this show does at this point. I just know that it was a frustrating experience for me personally to watch it. And also, speaking of circling back to the conversation about Giselle and Grace, when Dr. Wendy is saying, yeah, we had a conversation with you about your daughter or your kids or, you know, whether or not she's going to be pledging a sorority. And Giselle says that didn't happen. And then Candace is like, no, it did happen. I also asked you. I was there. And Candace and Dr. Wendy are giving each other looks of like, yeah, we didn't imagine that, right? We were both witness to it. And then Giselle saying it didn't happen. When Andy says from his ear that, like, you know, folks in the back of the room are saying that they don't have the tapes, and Candace gives the moment of like, you know, putting her hand in the air as if to like say, you know, roll the tape. I assumed that a tape was going to be rolled. I assume when they say that they were filming a scene, which is essentially what they're saying, that that scene was filmed on camera, that someone would show a deleted scene. So whether or not production is saying the day of taping that they have a copy of it to show the cast is neither here nor there, but the fact that there's no record of it, I mean, I don't think you have to be team Candace. And I'm team absolutely nobody. I'm team, you know, Karen looks great with the short hair and nothing else. So it's not that I'm like, go Candace and Dr. Wendy, because I do think that there were moments where they absolutely fucked up. I think everybody's responsible on that reunion stage for at least a little bit of this. Some of it's more than a little. But the way that they were looking at each other, I'm like, certainly there is something that footage can show, a la Love is Blind, where you wait until like the end of a reunion episode to show unseen footage about a couple arguing about oranges. I don't even remember what it was. Clementines, some sort of small fruit, delicious, a citrus, that it's going to be part of a, you know, that was a larger conversation. If you know, you know, and I don't remember anybody's name on that season of Love is Blind, but like, I assumed that we were going to get some sort of footage for the audience to see that they weren't actively lying. And the fact that we didn't get that, I'm like, well, Christ, I mean, I assume that the editing bay has a little bit of time in their hands to provide some sort of clarifying information and knowledge. It doesn't make sense to me, unless a tape was erased, it doesn't make sense to me that they wouldn't have that clip. I personally don't think that Candace and Dr. Wendy were lying. I think it happened. I just thought it was very weird that it then wasn't shown, potentially not to the cast, but to us, which at the end of the day is more important because we are watching the final ep. We're not there on set, God help whoever was, the day of this reunion, watching all of this play out. We are here at home waiting for some sort of moment of like clarifying information. And we didn't get an awful lot of that. And it's just kind of a downer. So now I guess we're going to get some sort of inside scoop of whatever the fuck Gordon's going to say. That's like, might be new. It is new information and might not surprise some of you. I don't remember. And that'll be something. And maybe Ink will FaceTime in. JK, he's definitely not. And then we'll end. I guess a couple minutes later, maybe Robin and Chris will yell at each other, and then we'll all stand up and some of us will have a glass of champs and cheers to this season finally, thank God, being done. Maybe part three will be something. You know, the structure and strategy of reunion apps, it's like every time there's a reunion, and I don't know why there are three parts to this, it just feels like we're being punished, honestly. You know, sometimes it's like the first ep is like leading to something and has some big moments. And then the second ep is the sleeper, but it's leading to a huge part of, you know, the third ep where you really have like the fireworks. Maybe we'll have that in the third episode. I don't think so. I don't think that's happening. I just think we're getting a lead up to a to be continued that's maybe going to be something, but probably not. And then just maybe more Gordon Mia talk and I guess Robin v. Chris, which is, again, a tough sort of non-argument to have because Robin is attempting to represent someone she, I assume, doesn't know on social media in order to say that Chris is lying or something. It's, of all the things to be invested in, I just think Robin should take a step back from whether or not a spouse or partner is being faithful when you're married to Juan. But that's just some counsel from Sarah G over here. Listen, did you like this episode? God bless you if you did. God bless you if you did. I wish I did. I truly did not, which will be a surprise to you if you've listened to this episode so far. And we'll see what happens with part three. I am going to talk about it. I'm going to mention it in some part. I don't know if I'm going to mention it all, but I'm going to mention a little bit of it when it comes to part three on next week's Andy's Girls. And God bless us. We've got some episodes coming up talking about Vanderpump Rules, The Valley, Summer House, three shows giving us an awful fucking lot. And also, speaking of actually mentioning it all, there is a 2-hour, two-part Satchels of Gold Spectacular on the AG Patreon, on the AG page, featuring 28 or 29 of your Satchels of Gold, your thoughts, feels, questions, and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Clorne Ben-Simone, about what the fuck is going on with Lala versus Ariana versus maybe Sheena, plus also Katie's there, and oh yes, Tom. And it's up. And I got a lot of thoughts and feels from you guys that I was so excited to unpack from AGs all over the goddamn world, which was, it's honestly always a thrill for me. I guess it's because I'm a native Rhode Islander. And so small state in the country, maybe you've heard about it. The spunkiest though. And we have at one point, the largest consumption, maybe it's percentages of Dunkin' Donuts of any other state in the country. And really, I mean, I guess you could throw like Maine and New Hampshire in there, but Massachusetts, the fact that we at one point had a higher consumption rate, or maybe it was like the number of Dunkin' Donuts per capita or something. I don't remember, but the fact that we were number one says an awful lot about us. And I don't know that it's entirely positive, but we are a focused and loyal bunch. And so it's always fun when I'm reading satchels from AGs in Norway, because even though I've lived in New York City for 150 years, which is wild because I'm, you know, 24, that it's just fun to hear from AGs and Bravoholics who are connected from all over the place and have a lot of thoughts and feels about Vanderpump Rules. And God bless, because even in moments in which it can be infuriating, it also leads a lot to discuss. And I am hopeful to continue recording episodes and having guests on who have diametrically opposed opinions to mine, because those are the most fun. Those are selfishly for me an awful lot of fun to record. And I hope they're fun for you guys as well at your spiritual offices to listen to, because who wants to just listen to me spout off my goddamn nonsense aside from this absolutely perfect episode. So you can listen to those Satchels of Gold Spectaculars. Again, it's a 2-hour two-parter up now on the AG page at patreon.com/AndyScrolls. Follow me on Instagram, which is also the best place to send me some satchels. I'm on Instagram and allegedly Threads at Dame Galley, and certainly love to get your theses by emailing andysgirlsshow@gmail.com. That's andysgirlsshow@gmail.com. If you have an index and a novel, hopefully long, of thoughts and feels, maybe about Potomac, about Vanderpump Rules, about the Valley, about Summer House, all that and more. I'm happy to do another deep dive soon enough. And thanks for listening. Let me know your thoughts about Potomac. Maybe you loved it. And I'm so jealous and intrigued to hear why. And let me know. And in the meantime, thanks so much for listening to this episode, guys. Part 3 to be continued. That's always great. Can't wait. And I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.